The free agent market might have become a little clearer, but still not that much. And we're getting pretty deep into the offseason, folks. Welcome to the morning lineup. I am Allison Footer. I am here with my buddy, Richard Justice. Richard, Mitch Moreland just re-signed with the Red Sox. Kind of feel like maybe Eric Hosmer, maybe that takes him out of that market to sign as a free agent. Dave Dombrowski sounded like he was kind of okay with the way the roster looks and maybe a little bit open to still making some moves. But what was your reaction when you saw that Mitch Moreland had re-upped with them?
Well, you know, we've talked before. Dave Dombrowski is not a patient person. He's trying to get his roster set, and he's dealing with the agent for both Eric Hosmer and J.D. Martinez, is Scott Boras, the most patient man in the world. Last week in Orlando, Scott gave Dave his spiel on how you can afford both J.D. and Hosmer. But Dave made it clear from the beginning, we're going for one guy, and that one guy apparently, I would have this guessing game. Does that mean Hosmer? Does that mean J.D. Martinez? Well, clearly now it's J.D. Martinez. This was a surprise. I don't think anyone saw this coming. But to me, this is a message to Scott Boras. We want to get a deal done with J.D. Martinez, and we want it done yesterday. There's all sorts of speculation in Boston. Does this mean they're completely out of the Eric Hosmer sweepstakes and that Hanley will be traded or something like that? Hanley is not going to be traded. The money is too big. Does that mean there's going to be a platoon at first at DH with both Hanley and Mitch? I mean, you're talking starter money for two different guys. So I think it's to me, it's Mitch Moreland is a good fallback position because you don't know what you're going to get out of Hanley. And it means that we are ready to get a deal done on J.D. Martinez. You know, could they still sign Hosmer? They could still sign Hosmer. But to me now, it's clear that J.D. Martinez is their focus. And then that question is, okay, we have this outfield that's one of the best in baseball, Andrew Benintendi, Jackie Bradley Jr., and Mookie Betts. What do we do with those? It would seem to me that makes Jackie Bradley Jr. expendable, and he might be wearing a San Francisco Giants uniform. So, yeah, it was one move that we didn't see coming. And it has a lot of tentacles to it.
Yeah, I mean, we always think that Scott Boras is sort of in the driver's seat when it comes to off seasons and free agent negotiations. But at the same time, doesn't Boras need the Red Sox to be in the mix? I mean, you need one of these gigantic behemoths to be in the mix to drive up the price. So Boras needs them in a way also, right?
Yeah, you know, he gave his State of the Union address last week. Right. It's a long 50 minutes to go through that tape. And he said, okay, calm down, everybody. Everything's been delayed a month because of Ohtani and Stanton. You know, every team was in on Ohtani, so that was an unusual thing. That did impact every team. And then the Stanton thing had a ripple effect. And then he said, okay, now teams are exploring the trade market. And this is the way it always goes. Before you give a guy $150 million, you're going to see, before you give, name a third baseman, before you give Todd Frazier a ton of money, you're going to see if you can't trade for Josh Donaldson or Manny Machado or Evan Longoria, something like that. And that's how he explained it, that, okay, well, Christmas Day is sort of the informal deadline. It's going to spill into January. And that's fine. That's fine if you can willing to wait. But at some point, you become a hostage to this. And Dave Dombrowski is a guy that likes to get a deal done. Give me a number. I'll give you a number, and we'll make a deal. You know, Scott famously does not give out numbers. So, he does need him. And I always think with Scott, and like with Steven Strasburg, there's a point where you have to say to him, I want to play here, and you need to get that deal done today. And I think players – typically don't do that with Scott. I know one player wanted to play one place. I always saw Pudge Rodriguez wanted to play in South Florida. He ends up in Detroit, you know. And Scott will tell you, like I once said to him, what about quality of life? You make it all about the money. And he goes, man, it took a lot of insight to figure that out.
Well, in Boras's world, quality of life does equal money. There is only one way to have.
True. And yes. And every city has nice neighborhoods. And I think that's the point he made. If the team – love equals money. And if the team wants you the most, they can pay the most. And there's always this ongoing argument about revenues and how much money the teams have to spend. And that's why, you know, you could say to him, Scott, do you think if the Rangers offered Jake Arrieta $1 billion today. Would you just take that? And I think Scott would say, you know, I don't like to put a limit on a contract. So, you know, I'd have to talk about that. And you remember when you and I covered the Carlos Beltran negotiations, Drayden McLean and Scott Boras hadn't even discussed money the morning of the deadline. And when it was over, neither guy could agree on exactly what they'd agreed to and what they hadn't agreed to. That's the way Scott does business. There is a time to close, and it's clear that Dave Dombrowski's ready to close and that Scott Boras is not.
Yeah, it's interesting because, Dombrowski and Boras going head-to-head was a little more interesting than Boras and Tipper Pura back then, but I digress.
Yeah, and let me just say this. There's a wild card in these negotiations in that teams that we normally don't see playing big in free agency, Phillies in recent years, I mean, Twins, Brewers, that's three that I can think of that they're ready to spend money. I think in the case of the Brewers, mainly on pitching, Seattle we know will spend money. And so if you're Scott, you're saying, I'm going to play this out. I'm going to find out what the market is because there are options that for my guys that haven't been there before. You know, our guy T.R. Sullivan asked Scott last week, hey, doesn't your guy Jake Arrieta, doesn't he want to come back home and pitch for his hometown team, the Rangers? And he said, you know, he wants to play for a team that scores a lot of runs, plays great defense, has a chance to go to the World Series. Geography is not the first thing on his list.
Yeah, no, the things that we think of as media, maybe the fans think of, and what's really actually the thought process is much different. Speaking of Dave Dombrowski, we have a little clip from him speaking to the media just about the Moreland signing and the makeup of the roster. He says he's happy with the offense, even if they don't add any other pieces, but I'm not so sure. Let's take a listen.
You like the job that Mitch did for us last year. As we said, we continued to gather information, probably a lot of it at the winter meetings, as far as meetings with individuals or free agents, trade-wise. We still continue to feel that we have the opportunity to add someone else to our club from an offensive perspective that won't be a first baseman. Outfield spots that would give us plenty of at-bats and opportunities for somebody to contribute in a full-time fashion. I don't know if that will happen or not, but there are some names out there, people from a trade and a free agent perspective that we'll continue to talk to.
But I think, Richard, we can agree that Dave Dombrowski is probably not done. He really can't be done. And I have a feeling that we're going to be hearing from the Red Sox sooner than later.
Yeah, and they could still – well, first of all, they definitely need more home runs in the lineup. And that translates to J.D. Martinez. Again, though, I don't know who you bump out of that outfield. Jackie Bradley Jr. is one of the great defensive center fielders in the game. And I still think Eric Hosmer – I think he's a great fit at Fenway. He's not a bunch of home runs, but clanking the ball off the left field wall, who knows what he would hit there. So, yeah, they're not done. This, even though Dave said, okay, we could go to camp, and they could go to camp with this team. This is basically the team he had last year, and he's not satisfied with it.
You know, you made a good point about the teams that we haven't really heard from a lot recently, or a team like the Twins that obviously made the playoffs and they're kind of ready to take that next step. But like the Phillies signing Carlos Santana, it reminded me a little bit of when the Nationals signed Jason Worth to a lucrative contract. And everyone said, that's nuts. But it seemed like, okay, but we're going to be ready to win in a couple of years and we need him in his prime. And it all kind of comes together like that. And not that Santana's in his prime anymore, but it kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah, it does. And the Red Sox were interested in Carlos Santana because when you weigh the cost versus the production versus Eric Hosmer, you'd say, well, Carlos Santana, everybody loves that guy. Everybody's had him. He might be a pretty good fit in our lineup. And the Phillies in signing Carlos Santana, I don't think they're done yet either. They feel like with all those kids, they're ready to take a big step forward. And obviously Milwaukee's prowling. They're predators. You know, they want a pitcher. And if if it's Darvish or it's Arrieta or Lance Lynn, they're going to go get one more pitcher because they think, and a lot of teams think that, but they think they're very
close. I would have to agree with that. Okay, let's move on just briefly to the Dodgers. They're always an interesting team, obviously, got to game seven of the World Series, but they're really going to be a quite interesting team a year from now. And that might be because they're going to be the biggest players to get Bryce Harper. Now let's not have our listeners' eyes glaze over by trying to explain to them what just happened in the trades between the Dodgers and the Braves. The important thing was that the Dodgers got out from underneath a gigantic luxury tax bill that kind of would prevent them from really moving forward and being, being a powerhouse in the free agent market. So now when we fast forward a little bit, when Bryce Harper becomes a free agent, we always kind of thought that maybe the Yankees would be the ones to nab him. We're not so sure now that they have Stanton that there would be any reason for them to get him. The Dodgers could be big time players in the Harper sweepstakes a year from today or a year from this offseason. My question to you is, who else would be? Because you need two in order to have him sign a blockbuster, record breaking, mind blowing, whatever kind of superlative you want to use deal. Where do you see this going?
Well, just for briefly, the Dodgers wanted to get under the $197 million luxury tax threshold, not to be a repeat offender and have to pay a 50% tax.
Right.
That's what this trade did for them. And they don't want Matt Kemp and, Adrian Gonzalez has already been released by the Braves and all of that stuff. So they paid a $36 million tax on this season. That's according to the LA Times. They have a $50 million payment coming from BAM Tech on January 1, and they have the greatest free agent class in the history of baseball next year. But having said that, Dodger fans, please note the Yankees are going to be under the luxury tax threshold in 2018 as well. They are 100% committed to that. So don't suit up Bryce Harper yet. And it's not just Bryce Harper. It's Manny Machado, who makes less sense for the Dodgers, Josh Donaldson, Charlie Blackmon, and, oh, by the way, Clayton Kershaw can opt out of his deal. So the Dodgers are – Andrew Friedman of the Dodgers said, oh, wait, what are you guys saying? There's a pretty special free agent class coming in a year? I hadn't even noticed. I've been so focused on this offseason, and that's a good thing to say, and it's not true. So Bryce Harper is positioning himself, I think, to be bid – on by both the Yankees and the Dodgers. And if you're a free agent, it doesn't get any better than that.
I mean, it's going to be a fascinating offseason. And I guess, it's not even like you can think of, if the Nationals aren't in contention, then maybe they'll deal Bryce Harper at the deadline. I mean, that's not going to happen. Not in that division, certainly not with how good the Nationals still are. So really, Harper's going to go out there. I don't think that we're going to see, and this could be naive on my thinking, but I don't know that we're going to see such delays. I think that people are going to be pouncing early, trying to get stuff done with some of these guys.
Well, he is a Scott Boras guy. On the other hand, he's 25 years old, and it's going to be tricky. He'll be 26 a year from now. It'll be tricky negotiations in that you normally just roll over and in this situation like this and said, this has never happened before. Maybe with Alex Rodriguez, but this essentially does not happen. And so just write down the numbers and we'll make it work. And we'll consider it a payroll item, a marketing item, a franchise value item. But as we've talked earlier, Scott will not give you a number. So I don't know how it gets done for an agent that does like to give a number, and a number that's going to be in a place we've never seen before in baseball. So let's hope that Bryce has a great, healthy, productive year, and we get to find out.
There's guys that switch over to Boras right before they're becoming free agents. Dallas Keuchel with the Astros, they just announced that he is now a Scott Boras. Jose Altuve, yes. He seems to – it's not like he's ever lacking for clients, but it does seem like he's has quite the monopoly on today's players.
Yeah, and it's quite clear. I mean, his strategy is I'm going to maximize the value. The game is very healthy, and I'm going to do what I can. And this, so everybody's not going to max out. Everybody's not going to set a record. But, some years we look at the free agent market and we're underwhelmed. When Manny Machado is your second best player in the market, when Josh Donaldson, an AL MVP, is out there, Charlie Blackmon, I don't think Clayton Kershaw is going to come back home to Dallas, but the Rangers are already whetting their appetite to try to give him that option.
Let's move on to the Cardinals. Those St. Louis Cardinals actually are pretty relevant this offseason. They obtained Marcell Ozuna. I thought that was a pretty big get for them. And they needed help in the offense, but they really need help kind of everywhere. And they certainly are looking for a closer. What do you think? What's next for them?
Third base. I think they feel like they can get the closer. Wade Davis is still out there on the market. I think he's going to sign with the Cardinals. But they have talked to what's the price you give for Manny Machado? What's the price you give for Josh Donaldson? They're more focused on Josh Donaldson. But both those guys are a year from free agency. Now, you would say, I don't think Manny is going to re-sign with the Orioles. I mean, I just think he's going to end up signing with the Yankees. And you're going to say, wait a minute, they're going to have all of them? Machado, Judge, Stanton, Harper. Yeah, they're going to have all of them. I don't know. I don't know. But I do think they feel like if we could talk the Blue Jays into trading Josh Donaldson and they're not motivated to sell, he would come here and he would like it. He would absolutely love it. He's a Southern boy. And, in the area where he's from, the Cardinals mean something special. Meanwhile, they're talking to the Rays about Evan Longoria. And if I think in a perfect world, they would swing a deal and get both Evan Longoria and Alec Colome, then you're taking care of third base, you're taking care of your offense, you're taking care of your closer situation, and Evan is signed long term. And in a real perfect, perfect, perfect world, you say, hey, throw Chris Archer into that deal and just take our whole farm system and we're ready to go. But they got better last week. The Cardinals got better with Marcell Ozuna, and they've now acquired two relievers, including our guy Luke Gregerson. So they're in a great spot. They're not in a great spot. They're better. And Fangraphs projections already has them just five games behind the Cubs. Cubs aren't finished with their work. But the team that, if the season ended today, based on the projections, would host the National League wildcard game. So John Mozeliak's did what he set out to do. He's made them better, and he's not finished.
So do you think that with what they're doing now, and like you say, I mean, some of these players that you mentioned, they'd have to obtain in trades. Of course, we know what happened with them last year, and they missed out on their first two draft picks because of the punishment that was handed down. They've made some deals in the past. I mean, I don't know like how really strong their farm system is right now, but I do see some trouble brewing probably in the next couple of years. And you still think it's worth it? You think that they're good enough that they could, if they made some of these deals, that they could still be a powerhouse? Because like what you're saying is basically if they're going to trade away more talent, then they are kind of maybe in 3 years are not going to be that good anymore. You're saying like this is the time where they're thinking let's go for it, and that they might be strong enough to actually do that?
Yeah, and they'll tell you we've got money. I think they're just competitive, and they finished behind the Cubs back-to-back years. They've missed the playoffs back-to-back years, and they're, you know, it's a city and it's a franchise that sets the bar in a higher place than it is in some other places. Making the playoffs is the least you're supposed to accomplish there. I don't think the Orioles are going to trade Manny Machado. At the end of the day, I don't care what package Dan Duquette takes to ownership. I don't think they're going to be able to bring themselves to do it. I mean, that's not the kind of player you trade that player. That's painful. You make the guy play it out, and you do everything you can until the last minute of before free agency starts next year. You keep saying, Manny, what will it take? Just give us a number. Just give us a number, and go from there. So John Mozeliak has dealt with Mark Shapiro and those guys in Toronto a lot. If they could convince them to trade Donaldson. Toronto has pitching, has interesting players in the farm system. You know, like you said, not as interesting as previous. So I don't know. John Mozeliak said he was going to go home from the winter meetings, take a deep breath, and try to assess where they were. But it's clear they would like a third baseman. But, you know, and they seem less interested in Todd Frazier. They seem less interested in Mike Moustakas for the same reason we talked about with Scott Boras, is that you can never get a deal done, and we're not sure if Mike Moustakas had a career year, and is he going to be able to repeat his production going forward? But you can never say never.
Yeah, let's talk about the Rays and the Orioles. I feel for both of these organizations, and the Rays are kind of at a crossroads right now where they're having to decide who they are, what they are right now, what they want to be. We hear a lot of their big name players that are out on the trade market. The Orioles always seem to hang in there, but in that division and just, you know, kind of on the decline, it's tough to consider them contenders. But they have to face it themselves first, right? Before they can really do well. I mean, you and I, we saw it in Houston. Like we know what needs to happen in order to be able to rebuild. It is so painful and it is so awful. And a team like the Rays, I mean, they're always going to be on like a smaller budget, and they really have to draft perfectly, develop perfectly. And I don't know. What do you think about where these two organizations are right now?
You know, the time to do it is like in Baltimore. So for people that don't know, approaching the last year of their contract, one of the five best players in the game, Manny Machado, Adam Jones, the face of the franchise, Zach Britton, one of the great closers in the game, and also the general manager, Dan Duquette, and the manager, Buck Showalter. That's the only bit of uncertainty they have there. The time to trade Britton was the trade deadline this year, because then, you know, a team gets him for the rest of the season, then the next year. But they were not going to trade Manny. So what I think Dan Duquette's trying to do, and he took three pitchers in the Rule 5 draft, I think he knows how his owner feels. So while he's going out and getting a price on all these guys, what you could get, how you would move forward, I think he knows that they're going to do the best they can just to keep the band together, go one more year, and then see who's left standing a year from now. And that includes Dan and Buck and all the players. In Tampa, I think they're more realistic. If you look at the American League East, I don't know that any of those three teams, Toronto's got a fighting chance. But Baltimore and Tampa are not going to pass those other three teams. You know, Toronto's got enough pitching that they need hitting. I don't know what they're going to do, but at least you could see it happening with the greatness of Aaron Sanchez and Roberto Osuna and those guys. It's not going to happen in Tampa, and I think they're more realistic about it. Like you said, it's the hardest thing to do is to scout yourself, and I think that's what Eric Neander's gone around done. So it's okay. What do you give me for Chris Archer? He realized early on trading Jake Odorizzi and Alex Colome wasn't going to be enough. If you're really going to take this step, you got to trade Chris Archer. And ultimately you have to go to Evan Longoria and go, what do you want to do? You just tell us what you want to do and we'll work to make it happen. And then you're in a full reset. You're already in a full reset for the franchise to try to, you know, get a stadium deal done and get as many young players as you can and start from the ground up. And as you and I saw in Houston, for teams doing this, it's very painful. Your TV ratings do this, go down, your stadium empties out, and you know, there's such uncertainty about how quickly you can come back and how you have to hit in the draft and a million other things. But the better course is to be realistic about where you are. The Yankees took it, you know. The Yankees are the Yankees.
Yeah, and the Yankees rebuilt in 7 months' time, and now they're another powerhouse. Well, they're again the powerhouse and the class of the league.
But you have to give them credit for doing a great job. That Brian Cashman maximized his value. He made good deals when he traded those guys, and they're trying to be. They didn't set out to take on the largest contract in the history of baseball. They didn't want that guy. They didn't want Giancarlo Stanton. They thought that wasn't going to happen. And they were going to go out and get pitching and then win the American League East next year. But they took – this is what good franchises do. They took a long look at it and said, we got a chance to put Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge on the same club. My God, we'll be like the Beatles when we come to town. And besides that, we'll be kind of tough to pitch to in October.
Yeah, and plus the Yankees were like, wow, we have all the leverage. We have 100% of the leverage here. I still feel like in 3 years, the Dodgers are going to say, man, oh, man, we dodged a bullet there. I don't know. Something about the Stan thing does not sit well with me. I don't know what it is.
But I sure like the idea of seeing the two of them, one of them standing at home plate and the other in the on-deck circle. That's and the Statcast machine is going to be cranked up.
Yes, it'll be fun next year.
I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, we've been doing this a while, and it takes a lot to get you all fired up again. But the idea of seeing those guys hit those lasers, it's I like it.
Yeah, no, I love the idea, and I think it's going to be really fun in 2018. I'm just not sure it's still going to be fun for Yankees fans in 2021. But hey, let's just take it one day at a time, as they like to say in baseball. I'm looking at a list of still available free agents, because of course we're close to Christmas and these guys still aren't signed. I don't know. Let's pick a couple and just kind of talk about where you think they may end up. You, Darvish, it seems like the Twins are pretty serious about maybe in their pursuit of him. You think that might be able to happen?
Yeah, I think he's going to end up. I don't think he's going to one of the teams we normally talk about. I think it's going to be the Twins, the Brewers, or the Mariners. Makes sense in all three spots. You know, I mean, you and I have seen him at his best. We've seen him throw near no-hitters, and we've seen him in the World Series when he's struggling, either tipping his pitches or whatever he was doing. But you're not going to get perfect players, and in terms of stuff and the size and the velocity and all, he's the guy you want pitching on opening day.
What do you think that the Twins said when they saw that the Cubs are also hot in his pursuit? That's got to be a little deflating.
Yeah, it is. But I think, you know, from the moment the season ended, I think people inside the game thought the Cubs were prepared to do a Yu Darvish for Jake Arrieta swap, and just to see where the money went, whether it went, name a figure, 6 years, 180, I'd be somewhere like that. It, you know, and teams are uncomfortable giving that money to pitchers, but that's what the open market's about. And I just feel it's simple enough that if the Cubs are serious about it, they're going to get him. And so the Brewers and the Twins and the Mariners are going to really have to sell hard and probably overpay hard.
I think it's really interesting. I think Jake Arrieta is probably somebody that I find the story, just the situation, to be intriguing. I'm not sure that I would want him on the team that I'm rooting for huge dollars, which he's going to end up getting. I don't know. What do you kind of see with Arrieta?
Well, it's true. He's 31 years old. He turns 32 in spring training, but I'm repeating Scott Boras' sales pitch. He hasn't pitched 1,200 innings in the big leagues, you know, because he really struggled mightily in those seasons in Baltimore trying to find himself. And Scott said the research that he's given to teams is, don't look at chronological age, look at number of pitches thrown. And in terms of, you compare him to other pitchers, including Darvish, if you throw in the Japanese statistics, you're getting a tan, rested, and relaxed pitcher. That's Scott Sales point, you know, so Jake is 31, about to be 32. You can buy it or not. He's a top of the rotation guy who's won a Cy Young, and he's won big games.
Tanned and rested. We have to make sure he's tan. That's very, very important.
And he lives in Austin, Texas. There's no major league team in Austin, so is willing to relocate. Scott wanted that to be known too.
Oh, these poor guys. You know, imagine if the rest of us actually had to move somewhere that we're not from in order to fulfill our jobs.
Wherever he's going, he will have enough to have a nice second home for the wife.
Yeah, second home, third home, and fourth home. Okay. Who so far do you think has won the offseason? It seems like every year the team that won the offseason doesn't win anything in the postseason because they're out of contention by August. But let's be positive here. I don't know. I'm thinking the Angels maybe. Angels maybe even more than the Yankees to me. What do you think?
No, I'm going to stay with the chalk. I'm going to go the team that gets the best player wins the offseason. But no team should be feeling better about itself than the Angels. Because, you know, the Yankees still need a pitcher even after getting Sabathia. Now, the if on the Angels is we need Richards and Shoemaker and Skaggs to be good, to be really good. And if they are, but geez, you can't not like what Billy Epler's done. You get, you know, one of our favorites, Zach Cozart, to play third. You get Ian Kinsler. And I was always struck by, you know, Brad Ausmus is not a guy that's effusive in his praise of players. He was effusive in his praise of Ian Kinsler. I think Ian Kinsler, to him, represented everything, you know, a player should be. And they re-signed Justin Upton. They get a veteran reliever, Jim Johnson, for a bullpen that tried out a lot of guys last year and had success with it. So they're in a good spot, you know. Have they made up those 21 games with the Astros? No, but they're trending in the right direction.
Okay, we're going to totally switch gears. We're going to end this podcast talking about a couple really feel-good stories that warm your heart. It is the holiday season, and with Christmas right around the corner, we Let's talk a little bit about just two very special players. Amazing stories. Cole Hamels. Okay, this news just came out. So basically, he and his wife, Heidi, had been building a mansion near Branson, Missouri, where Heidi is from. When they went to the Rangers, they decided that they're going to live in Texas full time. So this almost $10 million house, they had no one to live in it. And instead of selling it, it was on the market for a little while. Instead, they're donating this house to an organization called Camp Barnabas. I'm hoping I say that right. It offers day camp programs for kids with chronic illnesses and special needs. Every camper has his own volunteer. There's scholarships, so no kid is turned away. It is just amazing. You like when the stuff gets out because it's so important for us to know. And Cole Hamels has always been just a stand-up guy, one of the best representatives, in my opinion, in his entire career to Major League Baseball. What does that tell you about the – just speaks to the character? Because $9.7 million, quite frankly, is a drop in the bucket for these guys, and that they're making such a huge difference.
Yeah, it is. And I've been thinking a lot about him since Roy Halladay's funeral. I was so struck. That guy got up there and didn't have any notes and spoke about Roy's family, his parents. And it was clear that, A, he loved Roy, he respected Roy. But just the tone that he struck that day, you thought, man, this is a man of some substance here. You know, because we only get them in snapshots. And then for this news to come out today that he basically is going to give this camp for special needs kids $10 million, you know, it tells you that guy and his family and his wife, they have a good heart.
Yeah, it's 32,000 square feet sitting on 100 acres. That's going to provide a lot of help to these kids and just to have their space and to be able to run. I mean, this is basically like just being able to run an organization in a way that you've never been able to before. So wonderful for them. The other thing that I want to bring up is something that I personally was able to cover. The Reds at their fan fest recently, Reds Fest, early December, Ricky Davis, who was a pitcher for the Reds, he came over in the Aroldis Chapman trade from the Yankees organization. He had kind of struck up a little bit of like a Twitter friendship with a man named Chad Gibson, who and Ricky was trying to meet him and Chad's son Chase. He was trying to Chad would tweet him and say, "Hey, we're going to be here. We'd like to meet you." Anyway, never worked out. And then Chad, tragically at 33 years old, died from what started off as an infection in his arm. And Ricky heard about this and contacted the family and had Chase out to Reds Fest to meet him, to follow him around, to shadow him as he went around, signed autographs, did everything that players do at FanFest. Just a wonderful, amazing story. There's so many great things about it. One being that this was completely Ricky Davis's idea. So he approached the Reds saying, "Hey, can you help me accommodate this family?" The first thing that they did was go over to Great American Ballpark, run around the field. They took a tour of the clubhouse. They hung out on the pitcher's mound. They pretended they were robbing home runs in right field. And so the family was just like overcome with emotion on how kind Ricky was through this entire day. And we do have a little bit of sound from Ricky from that day, just talking about what an honor it was for him to host his family.
I can't even describe it. It was just so awesome.
To see where it was, a tweet that stands out. They were at the ballpark in Indianapolis. And I got a tweet that, you know, wanted to see me. And unfortunately, I was in Arizona at the time doing some rehab stuff. But to see where that relationship was, like you said, on social media, and then to see him standing 10 feet away from me and his family in town, and obviously wish he could be here to partake in it, but I know he is. And like I said, it's a special feeling for me today to be able to have him here and spend time with him. You know, it's a great feeling being able to have this platform to do it too. It's very special, and it's a humbling opportunity to help them through a time like this. You know, I know it's tough, but he's a tough kid. And we went out to the Great American Ballpark this morning and ran around a little bit. So, it's definitely a tough time of year, I'm sure. But anything I can do to help him and the family is obviously worth it.
You know, Richard, I can't really, when you meet people personally, and I am a stranger to the Cincinnati Reds fan base. So I show up there because I am from there. So in the wintertime, I am in the area quite a bit. I'm up and I hang out at Reds Fest. And Ricky Davis and his family were so warm and welcoming to me and just really let me in, not just as a spectator, but just like to really express just the kind of people that they are and the what this whole thing meant to them and how their hearts were going out to this to the Gibson family. So I don't know. It's, you know, you're, to me, like after being in baseball for as long as I have been, I root for people. I don't really root for teams. I'm kind of over that about a team meaning something to me. But when I meet a really special player, I tend to root for them. And I can tell you that I'm going to be the biggest Ricky Davis fan this upcoming season.
You know, one of the things Commissioner Rob Manfred says to players when he meets with teams, players individually and teams as a whole, is we've never been better. This game has never been better represented by players, especially young players, than this group now. Not just the way they play on the field, but their sense of community, their sense of responsibility. You and I saw it firsthand in Houston. And the point we're making is there are a lot of guys out there with great hearts.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, a seven-year-old kid who just, you know, he's road tripping around with his dad and all of a sudden he doesn't have his dad anymore. And I think that he's, you know, he's got a lot ahead of him, but certainly the Davis family, this is not going to be the end of their friendship. And Ricky intends to be a part of this kid's life, you know, as this kid grows up. So, oh, just great. Great story. Sad story, but also very uplifting. And that's where we'll end this. So, Richard, thank you very much. It was wonderful catching up with you in this holiday season, and hopefully we'll do this again.
Thanks.